Have you ever heard something like, you should be ashamed just for being your true, authentic self? Then Teología Sin Vergüenza might be the place for you. We are queer, trans, feministas from Latin America and its diaspora who aren't ashamed of our faith or our activism. Our weekly conversations offer a space for reflection, analysis, and spiritual reclamation as we try to navigate home, faith, familia, and identity. So grab a cup of coffee, whether it's café con leche, café cubano, café de olla, tinto, chorreado, or americano. Join us for the deep dive into the lives of theologians, elders, activists, and everyday saints as we talk about decolonial faith, gender justice, sexuality, and sacred resistance. I'm your host, Reverend Sex. And for all of those who feel like you aren't enough of this or too much of that, ni de aquí, ni de allá, you belong here. Join us for shameless faith conversations about real life right now that you won't find anywhere else. You might just realize that you are a sinvergüenza too.
Axis Mundi.
Welcome to Teología Sin Vergüenza, queer and feminist theology from Latin America and its diaspora to get those spiritual justice juices flowing. I'm your host, Reverend Sex. You may not have heard from a lot of folks who live shamelessly as both queer, trans, feministas, and people of faith, but you're about to. Even if you don't know it, we are everywhere. We do our work in the academy, in the church, in our homes, and on the streets. We fight for our communities and for our own lives. We are not macho, but we are many. We're irreverent queer feminists who are shamelessly faithful, and we're faithful theologians who are shamelessly activistas. We are shamelessly las sinvergüenzas. We pluck the ripest fruit from the Bible to make juicy queer feminist Latina theology that refreshes your spirit and quenches your thirst for liberation. In this episode, you'll find delicious decolonial theology for the real world right now. So get your cup of coffee, pull up a chair, because you belong here. Now, let's get down to pleasure. Welcome to this episode of TSV. My guest today is Arelis Figueroa, who is a minister, educator, activist, and community organizer working in marginalized communities in New York City. An immigrant herself originally from the Dominican Republic, Arelis now accompanies new immigrants as lead pastor and co-founder of La Iglesia del Pueblo. She holds a Master's of Divinity from Union Theological Seminary. Bienvenida to Teología Sin Vergüenza.
Thank you. Gracias. Un honor estar aquí.
Thank you for being here. I am so excited to talk to you about so many things, but we always start with the same question. So I'm going to start with you also. One, do you identify as a sinvergüenza? And why or why not? And also, we are in an English-speaking audience this time, so they may not know what una sinvergüenza is. So will you tell us, what does sinvergüenza mean to you? Like, when you heard it, did you hear it as a child? What's your experience with sinvergüenza, and do you identify with that thing that you heard?
Sinvergüenza in English, if we translate it, right?
Yeah.
Literally, would be without shame.
Yeah.
Without shaming. And it can have negative connotation also in English. But I'm a sinvergüenza because I dare to be a Christian in this world in spite of.
Ooh.
And I dare to fight for justice, believe in justice, and equity, racial justice, and a sinvergüenza because I don't care stood up and, you know, to say, to speak my mind.
Mm. Did anybody ever call you a sinvergüenza?
Oh, yes. You're sinvergüenza, muchacha.
And why were they telling you that? Was it because you were speaking your mind?
Yes, yes. And then I'm a sinvergüenza, especially when the whole queer movement and all this discussion in the church,
yes,
about homosexuality and not accepting homosexuality. So when I have my process of, hey, no, they are also Christian.
Mm.
Some people call it, oye, tú eres sinvergüenza. Tú creciste en la iglesia. You grew up in the church, and now look at you.
You
are telling me that you are believing this. What happened to you?
What happened to you? Why did you go against the like traditional position to be inclusive and accepting? What was your experience that made you go, no, these are children of God. These people can be Christian also.
A process of listening,
ooh,
empathy,
mm,
and actually a process of looking more closer and reading the scripture more closely.
Mm.
And then you realize, oh my God, it's all there.
Yes.
It is here, what we were thinking.
I feel proud of people who identify as allies who are aligned with our community, because it's harder for you if you don't have the lived experience in your body of knowing what feels right and what feels good and prayer and all of that stuff. I think it's mm-hmm. harder for folks who are straight to figure out, like, how can this be good? And so the people who are willing to go on that journey and then be public about it is a really hard process and a big deal. So I'm grateful that the Holy Spirit brought you to us on this side.
I'm from the Dominican Republic.
Uh-huh.
I came to you in New York in the 90s, 1992.
Oh, yeah.
Joined the Riverside Church. I started meeting amazing people doing amazing work. Mm-hmm. Almost 90% of the people were gay and lesbian. I was like, oh my God.
We're everywhere.
You know, This is something. So I started looking more closely because people that I love, people mm-hmm. that were doing all this work.
Yes.
So my first sinvergüenza act was going to the New York Gay Parade.
Ooh, pride. Did you have a good time? Was it surprising?
That was amazing. That was surprising. That was life changing.
Mm.
To be all the joy, but also the pain that this community have to endure and to learn the history here in New York.
Will you tell us a little bit about talking about the like joy and pain, that intersection? I think in this moment, so many of our immigrant brothers and sisters and siblings are living through life that still has joy and still has all of the things that we want to do in the world, but it is a moment of spiritual terrorism for our immigrant communities. And I know you actually work with a lot of folks. So will you tell us a little bit about what life is like in New York right now, in our immigrant communities, what you're seeing and experiencing, what your ministry mm-hmm. is, because you also have a badass ministry that I want our listeners to hear about. Tell us a little bit more about all of that.
Yes, very hard moment and mm-hmm. heartbreaking moment.
Yeah.
And I know this is the time to be with the people.
Yes.
So one thing that we are doing is accompanying people to the immigration court,
oof,
to the hearing. I have seen the solidarity of people even for other countries.
Yes.
And there is this guy from an Italian photographer.
Oh.
He go every week. Every day he's in the court, wow, documenting.
Yeah.
And he wanna document the human side of it.
Yeah.
He want people to know that those people are human beings.
Yes.
And then he came to the church and you know, have picture of them in the church with the kids. And and he took a picture of me that I didn't realize. And when he sent me the picture, he said, oh, it's a little dark. When I look at closely, I was next to the elevator. Behind me, there were at least 6 ICE agents.
Oh.
With their masks.
So scary.
The only passion that, and even I posted in Facebook, and I say, aunque ande en Valle de Sombra de Muerte, Psalm 23.
Yes, though I walk through the valley of the shadow of death. Ooh, and that's so, I can feel chills because I do think it's the most important thing that we're doing right now is just reminding ourselves and each other that we are human beings. And that feels like a question that I haven't really had before now. And what's happening in our country these days feels like what happened that we forgot that we are human beings? We, they, them, us, like we are all beings with families mm-hmm. and lives and hearts and souls and emotions. And I think that that work of solidarity that people are doing is in part to hold on to our own humanity that we are being trained out of to be apathetic or to be silent, or to be, you know, busy with our own lives. And will you tell us a little bit about the ministry? You said we have been accompanying people. Is this the church? What is this mm-hmm. ministry? Tell us a little bit about that.
Yeah, my church, is La Iglesia del Pueblo, which is a movement church, came out of the Poor People's Campaign, a National Call for Amora Revival, and the Cairo Center.
Yes, Cairo Center.
So the Cairo Center... They started this, an English group, and Freedom Church for the Poor.
Yes.
And when they asked us to be like, do the interpretation, and we said, you know, no, we want to have our own space. You know, we were very sinvergüenza also.
Yes, naming that. We don't want a translated version of your thing. We want our own thing.
Yeah, why not? And they were amazing. They said, oh, go for it. So we started La Iglesia del Pueblo online. And then we get funding also for the Presbyterian Church. They have a movement called New Worshiping Communities. Mm-hmm. And they were supporting Kairos and Freedom Church. And they decided supporting us too. Then came the crisis. The people call crisis. We call it opportunity of the immigration. We said, this is time. So we start ministering the Latinx, the new immigrants and the newest New Yorkers.
Yes.
And that's what we have been doing. So now I have been always part of the New Santuari movement.
Mm-hmm.
And the Santuari movement is called now the Santuari Coalition. So we are doing the accompaniment along with the New Santuari Coalition.
I love it. Now I want to talk a little bit about you. Because I'm curious where your heart for justice and organizing comes from, because a lot of us come, or we're first generation, we're immigrants ourselves, whatever our status is, and we come here and we're like, I'm coming to work, and that's the focus, is just working and, you know, maintaining our families, sending money home, that kind of work. But there's a special brand of folks who their work is this call, this heart call for justice and for organizing. And you've been doing that for a long time in many forms. And I'm curious if you will tell us, where did that come from? Like, where did that heart for we need to act and we need to do some, where does that come from?
I grew up in a church. My father was a pastor.
Yes.
And my father ministry was always a center in social justice and social services.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that's when all it started. I was always involved in the youth ministry.
You came by honest, as we would say.
Yeah, that's how it started. I remember, like, you know, I remember in my, at some point, I was almost like, I start criticizing the church, like, oh, we need to be more traditional, you know, because other people were like a more like santos. Maybe we are, you know, so I have that moment too.
Yeah.
But my father was always open.
So for you, like, faith and justice have never been separate. It's always been together, faith and justice.
Yes. Yes. Always. Always. So when I say I want to be a pastor, and then my dad wasn't that happy about it anyway. I went to Costa Rica once, but I went to Brazil and studied liberation theology.
Amazing.
Get to know people like Oscar Veloso, Leonardo Boff.
Wow.
Otto Maduro. I met Lula.
Oh, wow.
Lula. Lula was an organizer. So Lula went and do a class for us.
Wow.
Yvonne Guevara.
Amazing. Names that people should know and go look up if they haven't read and learned about these folks. Part of what we're doing with Teología Sin Vergüenza this season is to try to create that bridge, because a lot of folks growing up in the U.S. and speaking primarily English don't have the same access, don't even know the names, and we have to learn them later. And so I think this is such a resource. So I hope that folks will go and learn more about this folks.
Elsa Tamez.
Yes, Elsa Tamez.
All these people. So when I came to New York, I said, oh my God. I have to stay here, family issue. What I'm going to do, what in my life. Okay, I'm going to stay here. I have to reinvent myself. Mm. I don't want to go to a traditional Methodist church, because I was a little disappointed with my dad and things. So I ended up at Riverside Church.
Yeah.
That is the very progressive and liberal church, and los caminos se fueron abriendo.
Yes.
So God just opened door for me.
That's great.
I went to Union Theological. I studied New York Theological and Union Theological Seminary.
But that's not how it was supposed to be. So you come from a family that said, as a woman, you're supposed to have very traditional roles and do very traditional things. You said your father wasn't super happy about you wanting to be a pastor. Mm-hmm. Will you tell us a little bit about your journey? Because I love the sinvergüenza that you were to really follow and claim your own path, both in terms of your life, your immigration, your studies, your pastor, your marriage, your motherhood. Like, I just appreciate so wonderfully. I feel like there are folks who always come up to me and are like, I'm like a black sheep of my family, my church, whatever, whatever. And I don't even know where black sheep comes from, but it is a term that I've found so many people identify sinvergüenza and black sheep. Like, they go together. People like, I went against the flow and I did what I wasn't supposed to, but that's how I was able to be myself. So will you tell us just a little bit about that?
Yeah, another thing that I'm also identified with the sinvergüenzas, and then when I found it, I just found you in face. I was like, what? Oh my God! What? The whole discussion about people that have been hurt by the church.
Yes. Yes.
I was like, oh my God. Because that is more what really happened to me. No, not just like, not going to be a pastor, but hurt by the institution that was so dear to me. That was part of my life. Maybe another person would have been like, you know, forget it. I was mad with God for a little while. That was almost a breaking point right there.
So but what happened?
I think La zapata ya estaba, everything that my faith, and it was already there, and my conviction that the way for me to live my spiritual life was in the Christian faith. But that Christian faith, it was more than what I learned. And so when I started learning about we need to change our glasses. Like it depends on the land.
Yes.
You're, wow. I hear about the experience of the wilderness that we all have to go through, sometimes go through.
So what happened for you that you, even without that encouragement to be a pastor, to be independent, what was it for you that made you say, yes, I'm going to go study. Yes, I'm going to immigrate to the U.S. and to New York. Like, what was that for you? Because not everybody makes those choices.
Went to Brazil. After I finished in Brazil, my dad told me to come to New York so we can talk. Mm. That's how I came to New York. He decided that it was the best thing for me to stay here.
Mm, that's right. So does New York feel like home? Because it's been 30 years. Does New York feel like home? Does the DR feel like home? What is home to you? What does that mean? What does that feel like? Where is that? Is that a place?
I always feel an immigrant here.
Yes.
I'm an immigrant. Mm-hmm. It feels home thanks to the people met here, then to the family, people who became family, friends who became family.
Yeah.
That is home. Home because of the work that we have done.
I've asked this question to our guests this season, and I think every single person has talked about how people are home. For folks who are immigrants especially, I feel like we create home with those around us. And it's like a skill that we have. It's like a gift that we offer, I think, to others, is learning how to rebuild home and rebuild home and what that means for it to be in people and not just in a place. Mm-hmm. And I think that's part of what the violence that's happening right now is so intense, is because people are being stolen from their families and from their communities. People who have immigrated into the U.S. from other places and then to be snatched unexpectedly feels like a particular kind of violence because of so many of us finding home in people.
The other thing is that, you know, that we form communities, like, so we have a big Dominican community. And then if I really want to feel at home, I go to Washington High. It's the music, it's the food, it's, yes, you know, all that you think that you are in
you bring home with you.
Yeah, we bring home with us here.
I'm going to change the subject a little bit, which is we talked about resurrection. And I feel like you... of all people I know, you have something to say about resurrection, because we talked about lived experiences of living resurrection una y otra vez, like over and over and over again. And I wonder if you will tell us a little bit about one or more of your experiences of this, you know, experience of being... feeling like you're just one foot in the grave and then the resurrection moment. I think that's central to our faith. And I love that you embody that and claim that for yourself.
I like to speak about that because that brings the issue of mental health.
Yes.
For many years, the church don't want to talk about it. Mm-hmm. And
you have Jesus, so you should be happy and well.
Yeah, and people going through all of this and feeling like that. Oh, you just have to pray harder or something. And no, it's a real problem of mental health in our community. And I was not the exception. And also in my family, my mother have a mental health issues. And then when I have my daughter, mm-hmm. when I became pregnant, then I have my daughter, I went through all this postpartum depression, and it was very hard. It was a very dark time. Then I ended up in the hospital, and I remember feeling that I was gone.
Yeah.
That it was any future. I feel like
that was it.
That was it. But then God always has this way to do things. I start telling the people at my doctor that I was feeling that my home had been taken away from me. He said, no. I'm Jewish, so let me bring a Christian shaman to talk to you.
Bless that Jewish doctor who was like, let me get somebody from your faith to talk to you about
it. Because I don't think that the thing about feeling your soul that way. But it was just, thanks to all the care that I received from that community when I was in that place.
What was the thing that you were feeling that you needed a Christian pastor to come and speak to?
Because the depression take you to another level. Mm. Of. Mm. So it was just feeling that wasn't me. Because I wasn't feeling myself. Mm. I need that community. I need that reminder. But also that care. And
if I remember correctly, you organized inside the hospital.
Inside a church.
You created a whole group in the institution for your co-patients.
I remember that I have written some devotional for the United Church of Christ.
Yes.
And I asked them, I can use the computer. And then I went and printed. all of that.
You're like running a Bible study. You're having your whole own mental health crisis, and yet you are still running a devotional Bible study group. That is an organizer right there.
That was amazing. So I did all of that. When I came out, I was like, the only thing that I was saying, I was like, oh my God, I feel that I went to hell and back.
Yes, yes.
Really? So that's when a friend of mine told me, that's why we believe in resurrection.
That's right. It's not just Jesus.
Oh, my God. Mm-hmm. Yeah. It's really, see, that's why we believe in resurrection. That was a period of death, but now you came to life again.
Mm-hmm. That's right. We create the resurrection. We make it happen.
Accompany those people at this moment of their life more vulnerable. And the beauty right now is that we saw so many people from all walk of life accompanying them. We have a lot of people, not just Latinx.
And we protect us. We keep us safe. I think that's one of the messages that our people need to hear right now. I'm curious, you are working so directly accompanying immigrant families and being part of that same immigrant community, what are some of the things theologically you think that we need to be hearing, or we need to be confessing, or we need to be preaching? What is the good news in this moment? What advice do you have for others who are just starting to come into their consciousness and awareness around what's going on and how this intersects with Christianity and our theology? What words do you have for us?
Yeah, we were talking about love. If you say that you love God, that they haven't seen, but hate your brother and sister that live with you, that you see.
Yes, your
neighbor.
That's
a liar.
Yes.
So, your neighbor. So
that is a
love
liar.
Love your neighbor. And empathy, be with the people in this moment. And remember, especially for the immigrant, all those verses in the Bible that talk about protection of the immigrant, love the foreigner, prevention. When you leave something when you are, you know, harvest, leave something for the people, for the poor.
That's right. There's literally like thousands and thousands of verses about that.
About that.
Yes. It's hard to believe for me how anyone could somehow make the current political situation of terrorism against our immigrant communities match with Christianity, especially because Jesus and Mary were immigrants and there was so much mandate around hospitality and welcome and care. I don't quite understand how anyone who identifies as Christian could maintain a political position that is indifferent or apathetic to what we're seeing, the violence on the streets every day. And I wonder what keeps folks from standing in that gap of justice. I don't know what it is, but I wonder what keeps Christians clinging to their faith in private, but not behaving as Christians in public.
The other thing that we are learning right now that is so true is the Christian nationalism. Many people don't understand what it is still. That I didn't know what it was when I came. Christian nationalism is not a religion. Politics, and is how people are using the faith to preach hate and divide us. That's how people can justify the unjustifiable.
At Self-Force, we talk about Christian supremacy and white Christian supremacy, which is like the foundations from colonization way, way, way back where Christianity got merged first with the Roman Empire and then European empires, and that colonizing religion that laid the groundwork that somehow made some of us more human and some of us less human, and therefore like created that divide in a way that is totally against Christianity and the Bible. Like literally we're all supposed to be in equal standing before God. So I think Christian nationalism is this current moment's version of that supremacy culture.
It's hard to talk about it, but it's liberating also. Because the Bible said, you know the truth and the truth will make you free.
Yeah. I think that's also we're taught in a lot of Christian spaces to believe that the bad things that happen to us are because of something that we did. Or God is mad with us, or this is how it's supposed to be. And so that creates an orientation of just accepting whatever we get as like, well, it's that's my cross to bear. And I think the kind of liberation theology and the work of Freedom Church and what you're doing is a really important ministry because it shows a different version of Christianity that for folks who weren't brought up in liberation theology, whether Black liberation theology or Latin American liberation theology, Mujerista, womanist theology, we have to learn that later if that wasn't the religion we were given as children. And so having those examples of different ways to be in the faith and be Christian, but also be centered on justice and not just passively accepting what's happening to us as though God did it, but be like, that's not God, those are principalities. That's not Christianity. We claim a different faith and we claim a different orientation of the divine. I think it's just so, so, so important.
We are in that moment of calling things out. We are now fighting to have the Ten Commandments at the school. Mm-hmm. Great. And then you go and vote against giving the student lunch. So those are now giving us all those teaching moments.
I think we have a role to play as faith leaders. And part of that is being vulnerable and sharing our own journeys. I think to go back a little bit to what you were saying around your own dark night of the soul and your resurrection process, sometimes even just talking about things changes culture, like talking about mental health as a health issue, and it isn't something that you pray away or sing away, it doesn't make you less of a Christian. And I think a lot of our listeners need to hear that, that if you are going through depression, if you are having some other sort of emotional, spiritual, psychological crisis, it's okay. It doesn't mean that God has abandoned you. It doesn't mean that you aren't a person of faith because of your sexuality, because of your gender, mm-hmm. because of your life circumstances, whatever those things are, that doesn't make you less of a Christian. That just is about mental health. And while faith can help, absolutely, there's a whole mental health guild full of people and different areas of study that can support. And so bringing awareness to that, I just think is like, it's brave and it's critically important because it makes sense that we respond to moments like these with crisis because it is a crisis mm-hmm. moment. It's a normal reaction to terrorism, to be anxious, to be depressed, to be scared. That doesn't make you less of a Christian.
Crisis and Kairos moment is this moment when something is going to happen and something is going to change because what is here is no longer going to serve us. But it is a possibility of a new resurrection. A new world is possible. And this is the moment. And this is something that we are, those teaching moments come many times now with the Latinx community. People coming from Venezuela, Colombia, these other countries, and coming with the idea that they were coming to the promised land.
The American dream.
The American dream. And look up now what happened. Everything that we have in this country have been fight. That's nothing right. was given to us. Having the work of the people, the organizing. So don't believe that lie that, oh, they are giving you, they're giving all those things because they are so good. If black people are free, it was a fight. Then with the women. So all that, I have been talking with people before, all this, mm-hmm. when they are now, we are seeing this now in real time.
Yes.
And it's hard. It's hard because it's now people feel really like el piso se le ha movido.
Right. Those narratives that so much of what our cultural mm-hmm. myths are about the U.S., those are gone. Like, those are no longer true. And so what do we do in this moment?
What do we do?
We organize.
We organize.
That's right.
And that's what we always say in the campaign. This is not about left and right. It's about right or wrong.
That's right.
And it's hard that people have to learn that way. It's like I learned it the hard way.
Mm-hmm.
But it is good when now they are seeing that another world is possible and that they have people who are willing to walk with them. And the other thing that is happening is that people come to us, to La Iglesia, and I have we did a form for mm-hmm. people to let us know when they have court, and we prepare the team that's going to accompany them. So, as you can imagine, people are sharing this form with everybody. So, we got to court with people that I just meet that day. Yeah. Or I met because they fill out the form. And many of them, they are so grateful. And they have looked at my eyes and telling me that people in the churches that they go to, nobody come with them. They don't talk about this. And they just keep praying and singing and don't accompany them in this moment. Okay. Don't tell them what to do at this moment.
What is the dream? What is the, like, when you think of new creation, particularly from your lens of sinvergüenza, of faith, of justice, when you talk about this other world that's possible, I would say that's like new creation that we're called to participate in. What is the dream vision? What is that that we are looking toward when you imagine that? Because sometimes I think we have to do the work of prophetic imagination toward what is possible. Mm-hmm. What is that horizon line? What is that for you? Where do you see God in that? Where do you see new creation?
One of the reasons I joined a state with the Poor People's Campaign, that analysis that we do about how all those issues or problems are interconnected and that we are all connected. And then we have a song that says, my liberation is your liberation, and your liberation is my liberation.
Amen.
So the dream is when we understand that nobody is free until everyone is free. So that's the dream, and to break with this so individualistic society. And now we are seeing it's going to be people saving people.
And I think it's possible, you know, the barriers to why we might want to stay in our own little casita over here and you stay over there, those reasons are quickly disappearing. So the possibility of being together feels more and more realistic because we're all suffering in our own ways. Some of us sooner, some of us later, but we're in the same sinking boat together. So it feels like, all right, this is the time, people, let's get it together. Well, we always end. I can't believe we've been here already an hour, but I would love to end with the same question we always end with, which is, who are your ancestors? Whether they're thinkers or family or religious icons, who are those cloud of witnesses that you come to again and again in your prayer life, in your quiet time, that help you feel renewed and remind you who you are?
The first one is Doña Tina, which is my grandmother. That we always call her the first liberated woman in the Dominican Republic. She was so amazing woman, and she was so like herself and her faith, and she led the way.
Yes.
And raise an amazing family and love my grandfather.
Mm-hmm.
And that was like a very, not very common to see a person at that time when you would see that the woman was, that she was the you know, she was the one who was leading.
Yes.
And she was stronger. So Doña Tina is the first one. Then in the liberation movement in the Dominican Republic, there was this woman, Mama Tingo, who fight for the land, and also because it was a black woman, a campesina, yeah, the Dominican Republic, with we have that racial issues and all of that. So always thinking Mama Tingo, give me the land below to those who work the land.
Amen.
And she was killed defending her land. Her land.
Mm.
And then there was this woman that I met, and she's an icon now. She's, because she was a Haitian Dominican woman, Sonia Pierre, and she fights so much for the right of Dominican Haitian. And this is an issue that we, I don't know when we're going to resolve it, but I have this hope that someday we are going to do right to our neighbors, the Haitians. Now here, I would say that, but also being in this country for so many years and learn about the whole civil rights movement, Fannie Lou Hamer, and Martin Luther King, but I didn't know about Malcolm X. And when I was able to put together those two, that also was, you know, changed my life in many ways, being how those forces was they're necessary, you know. Yeah, I can mention more and more, but I stayed with those. But yeah, I stayed with my grandmother and Doña Tina, and we were just thinking about that yesterday, about the calling out our ancestors in a meeting that I was having with the Poor People's Campaign and with Kairos yesterday. And I'm glad that you bring that out, because as a Protestant, this is something that we didn't do well. Por eso, porque es que nosotros tendemos a olvidar, pero no, ellos están aquí.
And recuperating that ancestral, like, honoring, because they are in us. I feel like you're so right that that's been taken away from so many of us in the Protestant traditions. Like, we've been robbed of that remembrance, rituals, honors, because that also makes us stronger when we remember who we come from and the fights that they went through, and that those lessons and those memories and those resilience strategies and resistance strategies flow through our DNA, through our cultural generational experience, not just the trauma, but also that power and knowledge. Thank you for blessing us with your voice, with your stories, with your ministry. Thank you for being a blessing to our people. And thank you for being a sinvergüenza.
Sinvergüenza. Thank you for inviting me. Oh, my God. Honor.
No, the honor is mine and ours. Thank you.
Thank you for joining us today for Teología Sinvergüenza. I'm Reverend Alba Onofrio, but you can call me Reverend Sex. Let us know what resonated for you from today's conversation, and make sure to like, subscribe, and share this episode with someone in your life who might need it. Check out all of our other juicy content on this channel and find us on social media at soulforce.org or Teo Sin Vergüenza in Spanish. Cuídate mucho, and remember, we are las sinvergüenzas. Are you one of us? Uf, sí, 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 sí. Have you ever heard something like, you should be ashamed just for being your true, authentic self? Then Teología Sinvergüenza might be the place for you. We are queer, trans, feministas from Latin America and its diaspora who aren't ashamed of our faith or our activism. Our weekly conversations offer a space for reflection, analysis, and spiritual reclamation as we try to navigate home, faith, familia, and identity. So grab a cup of coffee, whether it's café con leche, café cubano, café de olla, tinto, chorreado, or americano. Join us for the deep dive into the lives of theologians, elders, activists, and everyday saints as we talk about decolonial faith, gender justice, sexuality, and sacred resistance. I'm your host, Reverend Sex. And for all of those who feel like you aren't enough of this or too much of that, ni de aquí, ni de allá, you belong here. Join us for shameless faith conversations about real life right now that you won't find anywhere else. You might just realize that you are a sinvergüenza too.